Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Cyber crime online, usually associated with someone trying to take your money away from you or gain access to your accounts. Cybercrime has other approaches, however. And when it comes to the state level, I learned from Ivana Stradner and her colleague, John Yu, the cybercrime in hand is at the United Nations as a treaty that is submitted to all the nations to respond to. It's entitled Destructive Malware Targeting Organizations in Ukraine, for example. That would be an example of cybercrime. But it's bigger than that. So it's not only stealing from you or targeting a state that's under attack, but a much wider definition, if I understand correctly. Ivana, a very good evening to you. Cybercrime, I gave the simple version. You think of somebody stealing, or cybercrime, a bad actor targeting a nation state that's under duress because it's been attacked or is in some fashion out of line with an aggressor state. But you're talking about cybercrime that lacks a clear definition. What is the UN's opinion of cybercrime? What is the range that they're proposing in their treaty? Good evening to you.
Good evening. As a matter of fact, according to FBI, cybercrime costs victims globally more than $16 billion. And Russian and Chinese attacks on American critical infrastructures are becoming commonplace. So why not to have a UN cybercrime treaty that would prevent such things, right? Who wouldn't like that? Except for the fact that this particular treaty that was just adopted in the United Nations has numerous problems, because this treaty has very little to do with cybercrime globally. This treaty is very problematic because it was written by Russia and supported by China. And not only that, this treaty has another issue that it actually undermines global human rights when it comes to digital protection. So it basically allows all those countries, such as Russia and China, to support their authoritarian agenda. But just to give you some background, in 1998, Russia submitted a set of principles of international information security, and it didn't actually succeed. And in 2001, Western democracies negotiated and established the Budapest Convention on cybercrime, basically an agreement that Russia refused to support because it was reportedly too intrusive. And after almost two decades, Putin's dream of regulating the internet basically came true. And Russia finally got a chance to call for a new global cybercrime treaty when the United States and Russia put two separate initiatives several years ago. But American isolationism in the UN back then allowed Russia to beat out the US and to receive UN approval to draft a global cybercrime treaty. And the problem is that nowadays, many nations are actually supporting this particular treaty. But here is the problem. The problem is that this treaty was written by Russia and supported by China. And it's one step in Russia's effort to craft a more vulnerable international cyberspace. As Russia and China are committing horrendous cyber attacks globally, we are allowing countries such as Russia and China to regulate cybercrime. But here is the thing. When I talk about digital authoritarianism, I'm talking specifically about how this treaty is a mere window dressing for enabling authoritarian regimes to censor free speech globally. And Putin and Xi are mastered this skill at home. Both countries are pursuing something that is called digital sovereignty. So think about this. In the wake of Putin's war in Ukraine, Russia has escalated its effort to basically restrict information and increased censorship. So in 2022, Putin signed laws banning fake news and penalizing the usage of the word war instead of special military operation. So you can basically go to prison up to 15 years if you use such word. And China is no different because Beijing has something that it's called Golden Shield Project, a digital security system basically that allows the government to surveil its citizens on the internet and censor their access to online content. So why should the United States expect Russia and China, with their authoritarian control over domestic internet policies, to act any difference when it comes to cyberspace? So that's the question that I've been trying to answer in this particular speech. Because if you look carefully at this particular treaty, number one, the definition of cybercrime is still advancing China's and Russia's efforts. Second thing, let's call a spade a spade. We as a democracy, we have to follow legal obligations. Whoever believes that this treaty will stop Russia and China from attacking the West in cyberspace, but also from launching influence operations, is sorely mistaken. If you want to, let's say, go on the offensive in cyberspace in the West, like you will have lawyers knocking on your doors telling you exactly what you cannot do. I doubt, frankly, that in Moscow and Beijing, there are lawyers who are knocking on the doors of their military or intelligence, telling them what they cannot do. So considering, you know, how Russia and China leveraged the United Nations to further their objectives, we have to understand why they're putting that, to put additional layers on our efforts. So Russia's cyberspace ambitions are malign, and its behavior in the UN is basically to co-opt the internet regulations, which is a typical of a revisionist state. And the UN, you know, allowing Russia to take lead on cybercrime negotiations, and this treaty would be equivalent of trusting the arsonist to put out the fire.
I think I have a document you've provided and links from your piece at The Hill that is revelatory that this is not about where we are today in social platforms or our ability to communicate with each other, such as on Zoom via Starlink, which is what we're doing now. This was always in the mind of Russia, even in the days when it was not seen as malign. This is a document dated July of 2000, 26 years ago. Russia responding to the UN's proposal concerned about cybercrime. The activities of each state and of other subjects of international law in the international information area, writes Russia, must be conducive to overall social and economic development and be conducted in a manner consistent with the objectives of maintaining global stability and security. I'll stop there. I think that's a polite way of saying in English, we're going to control anybody who doesn't like us and dissents from our position by each state. Was that always the intention of Russia? As far back as 2000, this is early Putin. It hadn't been at all fixed that he was a hostile force. He was seen as a transition from communism. But this looks like even then, even when he wasn't in charge of everything, Russia fears dissent. Is that correct?
Professor, you and I exactly are warning about this, that this is an assault on global free speech and promoting digital authoritarianism. So authoritarian states, whether it's Russia or China, they fear ideas more than they fear our nuclear weapons. And that's precisely anyone who is challenging their state narratives is considered as an enemy of the state. And they fear words more than they fear our tanks and jets.
What is to be done? Let's get right to it. We have a minute left. Is this treaty on a railroad train that we can't stop, or can it be objected to? We have a minute.
So this treaty, it requires a certain number of states to ratify this treaty to come into force. But the United States should not pursue this treaty and to support it and to give a platform to Russia and China to regulate information security. And we have to be very careful also about mutual legal assistance. And more importantly, we also have to be very careful because Russia is preparing a new treaty very soon on information security. So we should learn all the mistakes from this treaty.
Does the UN see what they're doing, or is it shrugged off as that's just business as usual? Does anybody object at the UN besides you?
There were numerous human rights organizations that were warning about this treaty. But this is a business as usual in the UN.
John Yoo and Ivana Stradner. Ivana's at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. John Yoo's at the Civitas Institute.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer. First 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.